With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
With Danny, I'm Grant. You're locked into The Fan. It's Tuesday, and we are just getting started with you until 2. At 1 o'clock today, Barry Sferluga of the Washington Post will join us as we can look ahead for the first time to some of the burning questions for the Nationals. Will Anthony Rendon be back? Can they get a deal done with Steven Strasburg? What are they going to do with some of the pending and looming potential free agents, older guys on the roster like Howie Kendrick, Yan Gomes, Matt Adams, Ryan Zimmerman? We will discuss those things with Barry Sferluga of the Post, who's covered this team for years, right here on Grant and Danny in 3 hours. A lot we could start with. We'll get into Davey Martinez not being named a Manager of the Year finalist. Anthony Rendon was listed as one of the three MVP finalists. And Bill Callahan wouldn't commit to Dwayne Haskins as the Redskins starter after the bye week. That's all coming up this hour. But, Danny, how was your Monday night?
It's pretty solid, my friend. Watched a little Wizards action. They got a W against an undermanned Detroit Pistons team. Watched some Monday Night Football, two teams that I hate so much, do things that I can't stand watching, which is succeed. But overall, pretty solid, man. It's almost normal again. You know what I mean? Like, we're back almost in a rhythm of normalcy. The Redskins are bad. They're a tire fire. They don't know it. They're in denial. The regular football teams are playing meaningful games, and I'm looking at draft boards. Off-season baseball stuff is kind of kicking in. Settle into the rhythm of a capital season, wizard season, kind of alternating. Sometimes you wear out the last button going back and forth on a given night. I don't know how to say this the right way. I don't want to let go. I'm not ready yet. You know what I mean? Like, I know we're going to do our job. We'll persevere. It's very tough what we do. Obviously, the adversity you and I fight through on a daily basis to talk about sports that we love. I'm just not quite ready to forget and not quite ready to go about business as usual. I want to keep reminding myself the Washington Nationals won the World Series. Not only do we have a team in Washington, which for the majority of my life still, not the case. Not only do we have a team, but it just won the World Series, and that's special. I'm not ready quite yet to start doing the normal business.
Last night might have been the first time in my life when a Dallas Cowboys wide receiver streaked into the end zone on a long catch and run for a touchdown where I jumped up off my couch and went, yes.
Got yourself a fantasy victory? A
fantasy win.
Yeah.
And nobody cares about this because nobody cares about my fantasy team, but I'm going to tell you about this for 15 seconds. I had two players that didn't play in my starting lineup for the first time probably in my fantasy life in a league that I care about. But in case you haven't been tracking, we've kind of been flying all over the place, and it's been a tough week of travel and everything else. We've been tracking the Nationals and dealing with everything going on with them. So there was a Thursday night game where I didn't have David Johnson out of my lineup. Somehow I put him back in thinking he'd play, questionable, whatever. He didn't go.
Yeah, don't be a running back in Arizona, by the way. You're not playing. It's just a disaster out there.
I was playing against 8-0 Alexandria Phil in our listener league. And your boy with two guys starting, getting goose eggs for not playing because of Thursday Night Football, still won that game because everyone else went off and Amari Cooper made the big catch last night.
How about it?
So it was one of those days where I'm going, man, fantasy's kind of evil. It's got me hoping for some Amari Cooper success here. Oh, how the world has changed. But the Cowboys ended up pouring it on, winning by 19. They're 4-3. They're not as good as we thought they were.
No.
The Eagles are not as good as we thought they were. One of those two teams is going to have to win this division. In fact, in the NFC right now, San Francisco has to be considered the best team. They have not lost. They're the only unbeaten in the National Football League. I remember talking to Kyle Shanahan at FedEx Field for a couple minutes. He came down off the podium, and I was chatting about how much success they'd had. And to paraphrase, he basically said, listen, man, we're not as good as our record right now. I'm happy to be where we are. But we've got a correction coming if we don't sort a couple things out, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was just being honest.
Yeah.
This was not, you know, on air or anything, but he said, we've won some games we probably shouldn't have. But, yeah, we're playing okay. We have a chance to be pretty good. They haven't lost since then.
No.
And they've beaten some good teams in the process.
Defensively, they're so good that even on the ups and downs of the offense, I mean, Garoppolo's had a couple massive games recently, by the way, as they've kind of gotten some more weapons back and healthy. Emmanuel Sanders is going to give them a boost, I think. There was still some juice left in those legs. Sounds like the Joe Flacco anchor around your neck makes it harder to produce, potentially, or the bad quarterbacking in Denver. He's going to help them. But I don't really trust that group to put up points and yards against everybody, but defensively, they'll be in every game because that defense is the truth. That group is good.
It's always a shame when you're as bad as the Redskins are, but it is more painful to me in years like this one where it doesn't look like anybody's going to win 12 games in the East. And where 10-6 might well win the division.
Yeah.
And who knows? You know, maybe if the Cowboys and the Eagles keep scuffling, you could be 9-7 and win it with a tiebreaker. There are two good divisions, though, in the conference right now. The 49ers and Seattle are both excellent in the West. If the season ended today, the Rams wouldn't make the playoffs.
And they're 5-3. It's not like they're terrible. I mean,
no.
They had those three losses basically in a week, right? Where they had that Sunday, Thursday, and then another loss, whatever it was, the following week.
But think about that. You could have a 10-6 team not even getting a wild card berth.
Mm.
Because right now in the North, the Packers are 7-2 and the Vikings are 6-3 on pace for double-digit wins and the last team in the wild card at this juncture. So you would right now have teams like Carolina and the Rams, despite being on pace for 10 wins, not making the playoffs.
This afternoon, your schedule all of a sudden is cleared, and you go to Charlestown, and you got to place a bet. It's not the Kennel Club. This is just who you think. Who wins the NFC East, Dallas or Philadelphia? Philadelphia's played one more game. They're 5-4. Dallas is 5-3.
Off the top of my head, and I would, before I place this bet, just so we're on the same page, I would look at their remaining schedules to see who plays who.
I think that's fair. You want to research a bet?
But off the top of my head, I would say the Cowboys, who are a plus 85 in point margin, the Eagles are just a plus 11. I think that's pretty revealing.
It is, by the way. Because what Dallas did is they beat the snot out of bad teams. And that's not critical. I'm saying when they played bad teams, the non-New York Jets division, obviously, like notwithstanding. But when they played bad teams early in the season, they beat them up. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what a decent team or good team does. I still have this Philadelphia thing in my mind that they're going to do it, but we're running out of time for them to get their act together. I mean, they've looked good, and then they look bad, kind of alternating.
So here's your remaining schedules real quick. Dallas has the Vikings this weekend. That is a very difficult game. My guess is Minnesota will be a slim favorite. They've got the Lions. Not great, but the Lions are tough and a lot better than everyone thought they would be.
They're frisky.
Then they play the Patriots. Then they play the Bills, who are 6-2. I will say Buffalo might be the most fraudulent 6-2 I've ever seen after looking up the teams they beat after the Redskins. I don't think they've beaten a team that's even average yet. They've literally beaten like six of the worst nine teams in the league. That having been said, they play Buffalo at home. The Bears you should win, especially if Trubisky plays. He's awful. They play the Rams, very losable game.
Mm-hmm.
Then they play the Eagles, toss up. They finish with the Redskins. I only count, really, three if you give them the Lions game, three games in there that are definitive victories. As far as the Eagles' remaining schedule, they've got the Patriots, Seahawks, Dolphins, that's a win. Giants should be a win. Redskins should be a win. Cowboys, and then they play the Giants again. So they have four games they definitely should win, one more than Dallas. So in terms of schedule, I guess the Eagles have a slightly easier road.
But they do have one more loss in the bank. It does still feel like the Eagles are going to get right at some point, and it's going to be dynamic, and their defense will step up, but it just hasn't happened consistently yet. I mean, they have some of the most impressive wins this season. That one at Green Bay when they ran it down the Packers' throat was dominant. They were awesome in that game. Now, they still could have lost it if Green Bay knew what to do inside the red zone. But I don't know. I still think their ceiling is higher, but maybe that's just because I'm trying to make myself correct because I predicted that before the season. Who knows?
I'm okay with trying to make yourself correct.
I love being right.
I think that's a good practice in general.
Because I'm sitting here wearing the fact that the Nats won the World Series. You know, I was so wrong about everything, but it's so much fun. So I'd like to be right about something.
It's good when your team wins the title, though.
I'll take that over being correct.
Correctness every time. So at 10:30 at the bottom of the hour, let's get into Bill Callahan being asked yesterday about Dwayne Haskins as the starter. To say he was noncommittal would be a little bit of an understatement. He was noncommittal, but he also is kind of dismissive of the idea of even getting into it right now. Basically just said, we've got a bye week, we've got 2 weeks. And I don't have a big problem with that. There's no reason to announce right now for the Jets that Dwayne Haskins is going to start. But is there a chance that he doesn't? Because that's something I think a lot of people would have a problem with. But we'll do that coming up in about 15. Next, though, some of the Major League Baseball finalist lists came out last night for all the various awards. Scherzer's got a chance to win the Cy Young, while he's become a long shot based on the injuries. Now, Strasburg was not one of the three finalists. Meanwhile, Anthony Rendon is one of the final three for the MVP vote. That's fun. But Davey Martinez was not one of the three managers in the National League named a finalist for Manager of the Year. We'll start with that next. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. So if you're used to the way the NFL now does their awards, and I actually love the way they do it. You probably hate it because you hate award shows. But in the NFL, they now have a big awards night the Saturday before the Sunday Super Bowl. So the night before, red carpet, everyone who wants to be there from all 32 teams shows up. Now the teams that are playing in the Super Bowl the next night are not able to participate, so they have to record videos if they win awards, or you know, they'll be represented through a family member or something like that. But for everyone else, for the other 30 teams, it's kind of just a huge party. And if you're a kid, it's got to be the best thing ever. I remember being a kid just seeing guys out of their helmets and in suits and ties. Even still, at 31 years old, I get a lot of joy out of watching it. I think they do it really, really well. Baseball has an awards night of their own, a little bit different. But they release these awards one at a time over their kind of awards week. So we find out who wins the Gold Gloves, and then we find out who wins the Cy Young and the MVP, and each day, kicking off the offseason is kind of another benchmark.
I've never liked the way baseball does it. And the main reason, and I get why it is the way it is, but it always feels so far removed. Because we've just been through the gauntlet of the playoffs, right? And the MVP is going to have been eliminated a long time ago, in all likelihood, right? In the National League, for example. It's probably going to be Bellinger. I'd vote for Yelich, by the way. But it always seems so distant and so far removed from the season that we're discussing, you know, because so much has happened in the playoffs. Postseason heroes have stepped up. Guys that, you know, were maybe MVP finalists had incredible playoffs, a.k.a. Anthony Rendon. If you could add in the postseason to it, he'd probably be the MVP of the damn league. But you see my point. I like an immediacy of it. While we're still having games, I'd like to know who the MVP was. But baseball's always waited until long after to kind of keep baseball in the consciousness for another couple weeks or so before we kind of dip into the offseason hot stove type stuff. I know why they do it that way. I've just never liked how far removed it is from the actual games that are deciding it.
Generally, they let it ride for a little while. And I'm with you. I get it. But I wish they would have, it doesn't have to even be an awards show per se, but some type of kind of one-off where everyone gets together and finds out who wins what the same night rather than the slow burn and the slow play of the day-in and day-out process. But I bring this up because Nats-related, we got a bunch of news last night on Nationals who are trying to gun for some hardware. Here's what's most notable, I think, about last night. First of all, Anthony Rendon is a finalist for the National League MVP Award. You mentioned Cody Bellinger of the Dodgers and Christian Yelich of the Brewers. Yelich, I think, was going to be the MVP. I don't know that you'd say he was running away with it, but I think he was solidifying himself as the true favorite when he got hurt, and he missed basically the final month of the season.
Yep.
I think that's damaging, right? The Most Valuable Player Award is a full season award, and you miss a sixth of the campaign. Bellinger now in the driver's seat, I would say. My argument for Yelich over Bellinger, though, is that if you took Yelich off of the Brewers, and I know it's funny to make this case after how great they were without him down the stretch.
I know.
But I promise you they don't make the playoffs if they don't have him all year.
For 162, come on, man.
They just don't. You take Bellinger off the Dodgers, who won 106 games, not only do they still make the playoffs, they still win their division. They're really, really good. He's great, and he's an unbelievable talent, but they'd be just fine without him. There is a case for Anthony Rendon. There truly is, and I'd be curious to get Nats fans' thoughts on this at 800-636-1067. He ranks among the leaders in every category, including WAR, how many wins he's worth. You know, defensively, offensively, a splendid season. Stacked up pretty well with the numbers of Yelich and Bellinger at the end of the year. But the big thing to me is, again, I vote on value, most valuable player, not most outstanding player. The best offensive player, we have an award for that. It's called the Hank Aaron Award. We give that award out every single year. To me, this is about, if you took this guy off the team, what are they? And I think, again, if you take Bellinger off the Dodgers, do they win 106? No, but they win close to 100. They win their division. You take Rendon off the Nationals, they don't make the playoffs. You take Yelich off the Brewers, they don't make the playoffs. So that's the case to me is Rendon,
interesting,
Yelich have a more established value with their team, number one. And number two, Rendon played the full season. He had an injured list stint very early on for a short time, but didn't miss a month like Yelich. So he's deserving. I don't think he'll win it. I think he'll finish in third in the category. But if he does win it, it's going to be well-deserved as far as I'm concerned, going into a potential free agency. That was one of the big developments. The others, Max Scherzer, a finalist for the Cy Young Award. Steven Strasburg is not. And Victor Robles, I thought, got snubbed in the Gold Glove category in the outfield. I mean, to me, and I don't think this is me being a homer. I think this is just legitimate insight. Victor Robles this year became the best defensive center fielder in baseball about halfway through the season. Number one in runs saved, number one in OAA, number one in D-WAR, number one in assists, number one in Saber Index. I mean, if you're just looking for National League center fielders, Lorenzo Cain got it, and I'm happy for him. But Victor Robles was a better center fielder than he was this year.
Yeah, Lorenzo Cain is great and is deserving of a Gold Glove. That doesn't change how I feel about Victor Robles defensively. And again, we got to see it more up close here. We got to see that basically was like 3 weeks where he threw out every runner. Like right. if you tried to advance an extra base, Victor Robles threw you out at some point. He threw out like a hot dog vendor at like a charity game at one point. And that guy was unbelievable. Defensively, he was great this year. He's deserving as well. So it's one of those things.
Oh, he's where, more deserving. The numbers say so.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think it's a as well thing. All due respect to Lorenzo Cain. You stack up all the metrics we have for fielding, and almost all of them go in Robles' favor. Like, if you're being analytical about it, you're talking about who we see more, who we watch more. That's anecdotal. That's one way to do it. Clearly, we don't see the great catches from Cain all the time. Here's what I can see. I can look up who saved more runs.
Mm-hmm.
I can look up all those little numbers, including overall value assigned to defense. And it's a clean sweep over Lorenzo Cain, essentially.
But it wasn't as if Cain was an embarrassment. It wasn't as if it was like
he
got throttled here. Like, where Robles was a 2.6 defensive war and Cain was 2.2. One's better than the other, obviously.
Correct.
And I guess my point is, I like this better than the old ways of it would just be three center fielders winning the outfield Gold Gloves and they actually are going by position, but it actually makes it that much more competitive. It's tougher because the center fielder, typically your best outfielder.
Right.
Right? The guy's predator
in
center field.
It's not fair to the left or the right fielders. You're right. If three center fielders win. The wrong one won. That's all. And again, you're making it like I'm being disrespectful to Lorenzo Cain, and that's not what I'm doing at all. Really good. But I could be really good at something and not be the best at something.
Right, and not
Victor Robles was better than him this year in center field. That's just what the numbers tell us. So, that having been said, we get to manager of the year. And this is where maybe the biggest snub took place as far as the Nats are concerned. Now, here's what you need to know before we discuss this. The playoffs don't matter because the votes are in at the end of the regular season.
Yeah, it's all done.
So, the fact that the Nats won the wild card and then won in the division and league championship series is, and then won the World Series, and Davey kind of managed proficiently and brilliantly throughout, masking the bullpen deficiency with starters. None of that helped his cause here. But what did matter was they were 19-31 through 50 games, and his positivity and influence in the clubhouse did allow them to get to 93 wins, which ended up being good for third in the National League behind L.A. and Atlanta. There are three finalists. I'm not saying it would be a crime if Davey Martinez didn't win and someone else did, but you're recognizing three managers, not in all of baseball, but in the NL, and he's not one of them for this award. Brian Snitker of the Braves, they had an amazing season.
He's deserving to be on that list to me.
He did a hell of a job. 97 wins. A lot of people didn't pick them to make the playoffs, certainly not to win the NL East, so you put him on the list. Craig Counsell of the Brewers. I think why Counsell made it, I'm guessing, is 89 win Milwaukee, four fewer than Washington. But when they dealt with the Yelich injury late, you know, they really dug deep in that final month and had a heck of a stretch run when everyone kind of ruled them out.
Yeah, Yelich, nothing. Their starting rotation was disastrous. So that it required a lot of managing. Whereas David Martinez can go, It's Max's day. It's Strasburg's day. It's Corbin's day.
Right.
It's Sanchez's day. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm just simply saying if you're comparing, Craig Council had to do a lot more puppeteering.
Yeah, which is their design. I mean, it's kind of how they draw it up as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third and final guy on this list was Mike Schilt.
That's the one I find very interesting.
Of the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, I got to know Schilt a little bit during the league championship series. Really likable, decent guy. Interviewed him a bunch of times on the national coverage I was doing for MLB Radio. Mike Schilt's Cardinals were better than they were supposed to be this year. And I'm guessing that the reason for him getting votes, like just generally, I think people thought they'd be around 88 or 89 wins going into the season. They finished the year at 91. So if you're telling me, well, they won the division, cool. They beat the Cubs and the Brewers, who some people thought would be better, neat. They got a couple more wins than we were supposed to, okay. They had a good season. Mike Schilt, more deserving, manager of the year than Davey Martinez.
Tough one for me to swallow there. Again, they did a good job.
Yeah.
He had to cobble together some things. You know, they had difficulty too, but not like the Nationals did.
They didn't deal with the injuries early in the season.
Ozuna was out for like 2 weeks at one point. Again, I was looking through trying to figure this out.
I'm going,
what are they thinking to assign it this
I
way?
I think it was that the NL Central was viewed all year as kind of the three-horse race, the most competitive, and they won the thing. That's the best I can come up with. But I get Snitker. I really do. I'm a little bit less high on the Council thing. It sounds like you're perfectly fine with Council. I think Martinez should, like, if I'm voting on a ballot, I probably have Snitker win the whole thing. And then I might have Davey second, Council third. I think Davey's second most deserving of being on this list, though, over Craig Council. The Brewers came into the season really, really good, expected to make the playoffs. Period.
Yeah.
I mean, they were an outstanding team. They went to the league championship series last year. Now, does he, quote-unquote, manage more during the game? Sure. That's their style of play. That's kind of the way that they design it as a team. They're prepared for that. It's not like he's mixing potions and solving algorithms in the seventh inning. They've got a plan before every single game that he and the front office put together. It's not that different, by the way, than like the Nats in the playoffs.
That's a good point.
They do it over more months. 800-636-1067 is the number. That's 800-636-1067. What do you make of Davey Martinez not even being listed one of the three Manager of the Year candidates and finalists in the National League? On the Fan, we'll get you Bill Callahan on Dwayne Haskins coming up in 9 minutes. Phones are yours, 800-636-1067. Reacting to yesterday's Nats news, who got love and who didn't, finalists announced for awards. No Davey Martinez among the three managers of the year in the National League. The guy almost got fired in May. I don't know if I should say that. Most people wanted him fired in May.
Yeah, who knows how close they actually were. I mean, we got a great story about Barry Trotz, where he was, right?
Yes.
It was basically, if this doesn't happen, you're out of here. But the thing happened. And then, you know, the other thing happened.
And my guess, just based on the people I've talked to with the Nats, is he wasn't ever actually close to getting fired for a few reasons. I don't think the Lerners wanted to pay him a year and a half to not work. I don't think Mike Rizzo thought he should have been fired because there were a lot of injuries, and that's why they weren't winning, and he knew that. It was just a very loud collection of fans and a equally as loud collection of media, some of them with powerful voices, you know, writing columns and on the air saying Davey Martinez should be fired. But that was the narrative. We were having to ask players when they came on about it in May, and the Nats were headed for what looked to be a cellar-dweller year where they were one of the worst teams in the National League. And then everything turned, and every player and every person in the organization tells you Davey Martinez's positivity and mindset and day-to-day approach is why. So you could tell me, well, the playoffs aren't a factor in the voting, and you're right. Nobody knew they were going to win the World Series. Well, did they know when they voted on the final day of the season that they went from 19-31 to the postseason the way that they did, that they played at a pace that was only exceeded by the Dodgers, essentially, over the course of 162, from when they turned the afterburners on to the end of the year for months and months? Dan's in Fairfax. Hey, Dan, how are you?
Hey, Grant, Danny, thanks for letting me talk on this matter. It's ridiculous that Dave Martinez wasn't at least considered for Manager of the Year, especially after the 1931 start. And, Danny, you were talking about being right. I was right about the Nats winning over 90 games. I predicted Strasburg would have his best year. And if you check your audio, I predicted Rendon would get over 30 home runs, over 120 RBIs, and bat over 300,
Bam.
And that he would make the All-Star team.
Play that lottery, dude.
When I did the national song in your studios, I was a little nervous, so that's why I sang Hit Me In, Coach, instead of Put Me In. But it kind of makes sense because Dusty Baker was the manager, and he was a pretty good hitter in his time. So thanks for taking my call.
Thank you,
you got
buddy.
It, Dan. Hit Me In, Coach. It's sweeping the area, by the way.
Right.
People have now audibled as they sing along to the song. They didn't even notice it until yesterday. Let's go to Thaddeus in Fairfax on the Fan. What's up, Thaddeus?
Hey, so I just want to – I am surprised that Davey didn't get, you know, higher credit. And I think one thing that really impressed me that I think is underrated is he'll focus on managing with the bullpen and the pitching and whatnot. But the fact that he was able to take these old players like Howie Kendrick and Kurt Suzuki and stuff and give them enough rest throughout the season so they weren't burnt out by the time the playoffs came around. I mean, I think that's part of the reason people stay away from the older players is because you have to do that. And it was just really impressive, I thought, and an underrated thing he managed to do.
That's a great call. The things that sometimes on a day-to-day might frustrate you, you go, how can you not have Howie Kendrick in the lineup? Or how can, you know, this guy only be playing twice a week or whatever it was? And that was part of it. That was part of the balancing act and making sure everybody stayed happy. I mean, think about years past with these Nationals. Okay, just this organization. Think about that year where I think Blake Treinen was going to be the closer and they started 7-13 and they never recovered because they had a bunch of bullpen implosions. Think about all the bullpen implosions this year. They were catastrophic. That's what undid them more than anything else and why they got up to that terrible start. They stayed together. Nobody panicked. Nobody pointed fingers. That's a Davey Martinez part. And that, to me, is the thing that as we remember back on this year, we start going through, you know, the yearbook style, right? We look back at the different pictures from the beginning of senior year and everything. That's what we should remember the most is that when it could have gotten really bad and gone sideways, as it has in years past, 1 year culminated with Jonathan Papelbon choking the MVP. That's how the season ended. This didn't go that way. It went the exact opposite of that, and they achieved ultimate glory.
Yeah, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you Davey Martinez was perfect in game. First of all, no manager is. But in terms of grading managers for their bullpen usage and decisions and the way they operate, you know, even on a scale of A to F where you don't look for perfection in an imperfect role, there were a lot of things he did all season long that you kind of look at and you go, why are you doing this? You know, using his closer as an example with a 4-run lead
will drive me crazy until I'm cold in the ground.
It's just baffling and doesn't make any sense. And it's why you overworked Sean Doolittle and he fell apart and had to go to the injured list. You know, there are things like that that you can pick nits with. But you have seen now how he would manage if he could over the course of 6 months. He's not able to. But the aggression, the urgency with which he made decisions, tapping into his best players, I think that would be his plan if he could. He had to play the long game. He did, and it worked beautifully. And on top of that, if you want to clown on him, go ahead. What he did is the single biggest reason why this team won enough games to get to the playoffs. And I'm not even talking about the postseason because it's not part of the manager of the year discussion.
Right.
But just know, if anyone else was the manager here that's been here, whether it's Dusty or Matt Williams or any of those other guys, I don't think this run happens. Martinez is almost cringeworthy when it's not working way of just reading something out of a Scholastic Book Fair like page of saying,
that's a great way to put
today's
it.
Our day. Bumpy roads lead to beautiful places. Like when you're losing, that doesn't work. But the only reason it worked, they had a veteran clubhouse and they bought into what he was saying.
I mean,
and that's
about
how they got where they got.
Think about all those Redskins coaches over the years that would give those cliched catchphrases at the podium and how mad it made
you.
Go to
Mike in D.C. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how you doing today? Martinez was just overlooked probably because of what happened early in the season. And that's the way I think now. Did St. Louis make a franchise record in August? Is that what happened in St. Louis for the amount of wins?
I don't know. I'd have to look into that. You're talking about 1 month. This is for a full season.
They got really hot. They were struggling for a while, and then they did. They took
right.
off,
Right, they got really hot. They were like 28-31 or something like that. They were just smoking hot for 1 month, and I think that was an all-time franchise record.
That's cool. The Nats set an all-time franchise record for 5 months. Which one's better? Appreciate the phone call. I don't think, I mean, you're kind of saying, well, voters didn't vote for Davey Martinez because he started cold, but they voted for the Cardinals because they had a great August. Yeah. But they didn't necessarily care that the Nats had a great September. I don't. You're trying to find answers, and God bless you. I mean, I don't have them either, but that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, they were kind of treading water, the Cardinals were, for a while. And then basically July and August, they took off. Well, let me thank you for your information. Let me counter that with, the Nationals weren't treading water. They were below water, being pulled down and weighted down with stones and rocks and sea monsters. And not only did they climb up, but they went higher than anybody else.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. Bill Callahan was asked about Dwayne Haskins starting out of the bye week yesterday, and he didn't say that the 7 car will absolutely be on the track. We'll get into that next.
Yeah, I appreciate the question. I do. I just want to be real clear that I want to take time this week. We have some time in the bye to go back and look and evaluate and look at our self-scout evaluations, look at personnel evaluations. So, again, like I said, I'm just going to go back to my original statement and just take my time and make the decision next week as of next Monday.
Bill Callahan when discussing Dwayne Haskins. We're Grant and Danny. Welcome back. Mike Jones, USA Today, joins us 10 minutes from now at 11 right here on 106.7 The Fan. A lot of things to cover with Jonesy. One of the things I'm going to ask him, Danny, he tweeted after the Ravens-Patriots game, Lamar Jackson's the MVP. And I jokingly tweeted him back, should we play the rest of the season or no? It's halfway through the year. I would actually vote Russell Wilson right now, 1.
Wilson's my 1, yeah.
I think I would put Lamar Jackson 2. Every analytics person in the world will hate this. I consider myself one of them. But Christian McCaffrey is 3. Now, this is just one of those, I'm right, you're wrong, I'm going to scream it louder, running backs can't be MVPs, read my book that I wrote one time.
Yeah, thanks. Well, it's turned into that, by the way, is that it's whoever the best quarterback is wins the MVP.
Right.
When's the last left tackle?
You take Christian McCaffrey out of the Panthers offense and you let me know how that works.
For me, I think I lament this in football, and we're just kind of talking about awards for baseball. I know we got something else to get to. But what's lost is you know, basically the top 3 quarterbacks. Is the third best quarterback, is he that much better than, say, the best middle linebacker or the best safety, the best cornerback, the best whatever? It's a shame that we can no longer acknowledge any other position in for the Heisman Trophy or for, you know, MVP awards other than who's the best quarterback. You should have a best quarterback award and then open it up to who's the best player. I don't know how you decide that other than a couple fantasy counting stats, but I think it's a shame. Anyway, back to Grant.
Back to Danny. Now what?
Mm.
Volley, pivot. Dwayne Haskins. The Redskins didn't name him the starter. They don't have to right now.
Yeah, a lot of people are upset about this, and they're annoyed.
They're annoyed because they want to hear what they want to hear. They're annoyed because Bill Callahan didn't say the thing that they wrote down on the cue card and handed to him. They just want to know that Dwayne Haskins is going to start. I believe he is. I will be shocked if he isn't. Here's what I'm going to do. I will reserve my making fun of the Redskins, crushing Bill Callahan, crushing the entire outfit that Dwayne Haskins hasn't been named the starter for when they next play a football game or next name a starter. You don't have to do it yesterday so that the Jets now know for multiple weeks they've got a rookie quarterback to lick their lips about and prepare for on film. They got the Giants this week, Daniel Jones. They're going to get Dwayne Haskins 1 week after that. He didn't need to come out and say that. But
he's from the Bruce Allen school of don't tell anybody anything, ever.
Most coaches are. Jay Gruden was not.
Right.
He was kind of, I don't know what you would, it's not new school because even new coaches don't do that.
Yeah, whatever the opposite
he's
is.
He's just have a beer and hang out with me guy.
He loves to share.
And everyone else is the go away from me, I'm telling you this, after I legally have to, Mike Shanahan style. But I did not have any kind of an emotional reaction to that. I wasn't upset because I didn't think he was going to name the starter yesterday. He could have easily come out and done it, and I would have been happy, and we could talk today about Dwayne Haskins as the guy moving forward. Here's what I believe happened, or at least hope happened behind the scenes. I think Dwayne Haskins has already been told, hey, keep this quiet. We don't want this out. And you're the only person we're telling right now, other than Case and Colt. But you will be the starting quarterback for the rest of the season beginning in 2 weeks.
Take the reins, young man.
Get ready. Mm-hmm. Whatever you got to do during this bye week, however many cram sessions you got to have with the girlfriend and your dad, you do that. You are our guy. Good luck to you. We'll see you next week back at the park.
People put a lot of meaning on yesterday, Callahan talking. I'm confused by that, honestly. Have we not seen this league before? Have we never seen a head coach stand up there and say something and then talk out of the other side of his mouth privately to somebody else? Have we never seen this act right here? People are trying to figure out, like, does it mean he doesn't want to play Haskins, or does he want to play Case Keenum? Or once an announcement actually is made that's incorrect, let's crush the incorrect thing. This reminds me of so many other deals with the Redskins. There are plenty of bits of ammunition to go after the Redskins about where they have done something incorrectly. Let's wait until the facts come out. What do we have? What information do we have so far? Dwayne Haskins started, didn't go all down his leg, was okay. The team offense stinks. They're 1-8. There's some semblance of common sense here. If he doesn't start in the next game, it's malpractice. It's ridiculous. We can use all our big words and go crazy appropriately. Let's not go crazy yet. There's no reason just to jump to craziness because the tight-lipped coach that basically is permanently on, talk in a very verbose way mode, but doesn't say anything, didn't give you the information that you wanted. He's under no obligation to do so.
I'm never going to pummel a team for not just opening their books, as I like to call it, to the public. I don't need to know anything. Now, what I would love to have a better understanding of is what's going on behind the scenes right now. No, as a fan on the outside, as a media member, I don't need you to just give me the blueprint for your master plan the next few weeks. But you better be putting the ball in motion behind the scenes. And that's something that I would be curious about. Bill Callahan said, I'm going to look over everything. I'm going to watch everything. If he actually come this weekend, is still actually, quote unquote, studying Dwayne Haskins to see, is he better than Keenum right now? You're missing the point. If he's watching all the film back to say, can he make this read? Can he do this? Keenum could do that. Keenum can do that. No. That's not what this is about. There's no film that you can watch to answer this question. Here's what you need to know. Your record, where this guy was drafted, and the fact that Case Keenum will not be here next year. Nothing else matters. If Case Keenum hadn't had a ball hit the carpet yet this year, and you were 1-8, and he is 100% completion and 158.3 quarterback rating and a bunch of losses because he's been running it 82 times a game, he shouldn't start the next game. This is now Dwayne Haskins' time. You are out of contention. You are bad. There's nothing redeeming right now about your offense.
Mm-hmm.
This guy needs to play.
Yep.
And if you're telling me he can't play, yes, he can. He just did this weekend. But we had to dumb everything down. You chose to play him over Colt McCoy. You told me he's okay. By doing that, you've spent weeks telling me, oh, this is some misfit toy from the Island of Toys where they're all broken and he can't possibly play. We can't possibly ask him to break the huddle and clap at the same time as he walked forward and then take a snap. You've been telling me that for months. Then you chose him over a guy who's been in your offense for years. So you clearly think he can do it well enough to compete. Last weekend, he's now the guy, period, end of sentence, next thing. What's the next order of business?
Right. Now, again, we are trying to tell you, don't react yet. That's I think, the theme. If I could speak, I don't want to speak for you, but I think this is what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
This is my thesis. Do not react yet. People reacted yesterday, and there were a lot. I saw a lot of annoyance. I heard a lot of irritation.
Or react, but don't be angry. He's not the starter. He's going to start. If he doesn't start, let's all have a four-hour show where we destroy the Redskins.
If he doesn't, let's have a big party. Let's have a big festival where we throw things on the fire. Let's go crazy. Until then, there's no need to do that just yet. A guy that is Bruce's guy, who wants to impress Bruce, because he wants this head coaching gig, I'd imagine, right, is going to do the thing that Bruce loves the most, which is, you don't have to share with that darn media. I hate those guys. Fine. Be tight-lipped. Do your weird tap dance. Tell Craig Hoffman how much you appreciate his question that you don't appreciate at all.
Mike Jones, USA Today, goes around the NFL with us next on Grant and Danny. You are locked in to 106.7 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.